Welcome to Chip Chat, an interview series that connects you with technology experts around the issues that industry is focused on today. And now your host, Allison Klein.
Welcome back to Chip Chat. It's day two of the OpenStack Summit. We're coming to you live from Paris, France, and I'm Allison Klein. I'm joined by a colleague of mine, Krish Raghuram, Enterprise Marketing Manager in the Open Source Tech Center at Intel. Welcome, Krish.
Hi, Allison. Morning.
So, Krish, you and I have been chatting quite a bit lately about OpenStack, but why don't you start by just telling the audience a little bit about what you do at Intel and what is this Open Source Tech Center?
Sure. I'm in charge of OpenStack marketing. OpenStack is the open source cloud operating environment that Intel's a part of. And so I'm in the Open Source Technology Center that's involved in doing a lot of engineering for open source projects. The Linux community is a famous one, the Linux kernel work. And of course, there are many other projects that the OTC, as we call ourselves, is involved in. And OpenStack is one of the newer ones, but we've also been involved in other projects like Hadoop and the Octo project and Tizen and so on. So all the way from the desktop to the data center.
So we're going to talk about OpenStack later in the program, but I just wanted to start by asking you, because you have been involved in this for a long time, why does Intel make such a deep investment in open source, and what is the purpose of that in terms of the delivery of solutions to the marketplace?
Sure. I think there are two objectives coming out of that. One, of course, Intel's self-interest in seeing a lot of the technologies that we work on being realized through the software layers and at least tested out and proven. Even while many of the other vendors in the non-open source space are also adopting the same. So we value those relationships as much as we value the relationships of the open source community. But the open source community does give us a little bit more opportunity to engage with developers directly and with a much wider spread of developers and get some of our technologies quickly proven and tested.
So when you take a look at OpenStack, we've got this long history of engagement. Why have we prioritized OpenStack in your perspective as an area for us to contribute?
Sure. It was, as you rightly pointed out, there have actually been other open source environments in the cloud space. OpenStack has picked up momentum with sheer community involvement. It's captured the imagination of a very large swath of developers across, as we just saw in the keynote this morning, 59 countries are represented here. It's just the tremendous momentum that it has, which tells us that it's the place where a lot more innovation and agility is going to happen. So clearly it's the one that Intel has decided to throw a lot of its weight, at least the Open Source Technology Center has chosen to throw its weight behind it.
Now, obviously, OpenStack recently had its Juno release out, and I was checking Stackalytics, and it looks like Intel was in the top 10 of contributors to Juno. I know that these lists are tracked very carefully in the open source community. What kind of things are they tracking? Like, how do they measure who's contributed what? Is it based on line of code? Is it based on other factors?
Actually, they have multiple things. If you went to Stackalytics, you could actually choose the particular criterion on which you want to see the rankings of the various companies. So it's Blueprint submitted. This is, of course, where the architects are active in terms of submitting their ideas and into Blueprints. And then you have code submissions. Mm-hmm. Again, they measure them mainly by the number of projects, I guess, that you've submitted. You can actually look at lines of code, too, so if you want to get that deep down. And then code reviews. So it's really the number of individual projects that people have been involved in.
And I guess, it's not just code submissions that drive an open source effort forward. What else is Intel invested in here in terms of broader education and those types of things?
Oh, yeah. Of course, blueprints and code submissions. And then we have the engagements with the downstream distributors. I think that's critical because you can put a lot of code upstream, but if you aren't really engaged with the people who can productize and take it to market, a lot of that is not going to see the light of day because there's a lot of work that's involved in productizing, testing, validating, certifying. And so we work with all the distributors to do that. And then, as you rightly point out, the last step is actually educating end users. So we go all the way to working with the downstream distributors to do workshops with end users, show them what the technology can do, support POCs, exercises. And the Intel field organizations are also heavily involved in engaging with these large IT organizations to do that.
I saw a statistic that average companies use about 30% open source software, and fast-moving companies, the number is much higher. Why do you think that there is that disparity, and what does open source give to an organization from a usage standpoint in terms of additional agility within the company?
Sure. As we've noticed, large organizations have large software departments. I mean, their IT departments are not just operations people. They have a large number of developers in-house. Mm-hmm. Open source gives the opportunity for many of these end-user organizations to actually participate in how code is written and the specific problems that are tackled and prioritized and eventually make it into distributions, product distributions. So for them, I think it's powerful. They can actually be involved in seeing how the product is built.
So the community extends to the user community.
Absolutely.
And when you look at an event like OpenStack Summit, you've been to multiple OpenStack Summits. How has the transition been in your mind, from the early days of OpenStack as a concept and something that, you know, really wasn't ready for prime time to where we are today, where we have multiple distributions in the marketplace, enterprises deploying, telcos deploying. Describe the transition and what you think were the critical milestones along the way to get us to where we're at.
I think if you looked over the last year and a half, you'd seen the increasing participation by end users. So it shows up in the summits, you know, who's doing most of the talking. The summit that we're at right now, you see a lot of end users mm-hmm. being featured. They're talking. They're participating in all the design sessions, and so they're a lot more active. So what's happened over the last year and a half is that many end users have seriously tried the technology out, and maybe they haven't deployed it across the entire company, and it's not quite there yet. But as we saw in the keynote yesterday, and BMW said, this is serious. We tried it out. This thing fits in with our strategic vision. Mm-hmm. We're dead serious about it, but we also know there are a few things that need to be done to make it, you know, enterprise class. So I think the participation by end users is significant.
And when we look at our experience with Linux, for example, BMW called out code stabilization and massive changes from release to release of OpenStack that's going on right now. Did we see the same thing with earlier versions of Linux? And how did that transition to a more mature product?
Yeah, I mean, Linux is still on a very very fast release cycle. I mean, they do many, many more releases or dot releases of the Linux kernel than we have of the OpenStack releases. Mm-hmm. The way they've managed it, obviously, the organizations have become very mature. The distributors, the Linux operating system distributors like Red Hat and SUSE and Canonical, those have become very mature in taking those changes, testing them, and doing all the dot releases and providing the end users with the idea of, you know, how to upgrade their systems in flight with those new releases. I think OpenStack has got a little bit more way to go to get there, and that is what is coming out yesterday, that the whole release process and advising end users of how they can actually do an upgrade in flight. Of course, things get a lot more complex when you're trying to upgrade an entire cloud environment in flight when the actual production application's running. If you're just upgrading an individual server, you can think in terms of moving a workload off and then pulling the server down and upgrading it. But in upgrading an entire cloud, it gets a little more complicated than that. So I think that's why there's a little bit more work to be done.
So if you take a look at where we're at today in Paris and you forecast out into next year's OpenStack Summit, what are the kind of things that you're going to be looking for to ensure, just at your gut level, oh yeah, we're on the right track? You know, is it production deployments? Is it multiple use cases of different types of industries? What are the key things?
For sure, more production deployments. I think what we've seen until now, at least we're waiting to hear for the results from the survey from this summit, but from the last one, we did see that the number of deployments had increased significantly, almost doubled, but there was still a large number of people in test and dev kind of environments, mm-hmm. not real. I should say they are production in a certain sense, but not the mainstream applications. A year from now, what we'd like to see is someone standing up and saying, hey, we did move a lot of our core business critical apps onto our private cloud. Mm-hmm. And the private cloud is, some of it is on-prem and some of it is managed private cloud off-premises with some provider. Mm-hmm. That's what we'd like to see. I think we will see that a year from now, someone coming forward and claiming that they have moved some of their critical apps over to that environment.
Now, in the sessions yesterday, I noticed a lot of focus on the telco environment. And there, it seems like a much different value proposition. Can you tell me what you've gleaned from telco providers as to why they're using OpenStack and, you know, what kind of business problem they're trying to address?
Sure. I mean, for the telco providers, it's the provisioning of the networks. They have to constantly deal with changing workloads and demands, and the more traditional infrastructure does create a huge operational load for them in terms mm-hmm. of having to sit and provision everything. SDI gives them, I mean, it helps them look into the future and see that they can cut their operations costs tremendously. So that's why they're excited about it. But at the same time, they realize that theirs is probably five nines of availability is the kind of, you know, they operate at a completely different level in terms mm-hmm. of availability. So they are also driving a demand for certain capabilities in the OpenStack environment. But I think they're seeing a potential payback from cutting down their operational costs and even their, you know, capital expense costs, because they get a better, more efficient use of their infrastructure this way. I think they're seeing it, they're seeing it now.
Mm-hmm. When you look at an event like this, tons of developers from all over the world, what types of people beyond the core, beyond enterprise, have you seen get pulled into an OpenStack community? And, you know, what kinds of groups of folks are you surprised to see here?
I would think it would be the enterprise IT people, people whom you'd normally associate with trying to deploy your SAP and Exchange and things like that, but who are now getting pretty heavily involved in seeing how they can actually improve the infrastructure to support newer lines of businesses, or people wanting to get newer apps out fast. Mm-hmm. So I'm surprised they're moving so fast, because I think we saw it even yesterday when we had Ruchi Bhargava of Intel IT saying how they've made this transition from being an IT shop that pretty much told people, hey, here's what you can do and here's what you can't, to now trying to meet the needs of all their business users wanting to roll out new apps. So yeah, that's the surprising thing. They moved fast.
And, you know, I think that the interesting thing is, once you have this cloud environment installed and you've actually got it to an automated state, that means new challenges to the developers at the app layer. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, there's this term bandied about quite a bit, that applications need to be cloud aware. In other words, they got to be architected in a certain way that they're tolerant of, you know, different virtual machines just being pulled down and moved around, and what they call the stateless kind of apps. At the same time, we also, if you talk to the telco people, they'll say, oh, hold on a minute, not all our apps can ever become stateless. We have to keep sessions alive. And so there's a challenge over there. So there, I think there are a lot of enterprise apps that can be re-architected, and I think they will happen. People will start recognizing that the cloud environment is here to stay. Let's write the apps in such a way that we make it easy mm-hmm. For the apps to take advantage of the cloud infrastructure. Otherwise, you're ending up with creating silos and saying these apps have to run in these servers only and they can't be migrated anywhere. And nobody wants that. So that's going to happen.
So you're talking about two different trends. One is the integration of a private cloud within an enterprise environment using OpenStack or another orchestration solution. Second is the percentage of workloads that are actually running within that private cloud environment and the types of apps that are being architected for them. It should be interesting to watch over time to see how both of those trends are delivered. Right. I did want to ask you, Krish, about one thing, which is big news for Intel yesterday. Intel, as a platinum member of the OpenStack Foundation and is the guy that's in charge of marketing OpenStack, that must be good news for you.
It is.
So what does that mean, platinum member, and what is the selection process for that? There's not that many of them.
Right, 8 platinum members, I think. It means we have a permanent seat on the board. It means that we can more definitely plan on how we influence the whole movement and what kind of capabilities need to be addressed, the priorities assigned to various projects, and so on. And of course, it's not so much a tops-down community, as you've probably noticed. It's a lot of it is driven by, you know, engineers getting together and deciding what seems to be the best thing to do. Mm-hmm. So at the same time, being on the board doesn't mean that you automatically get to define what projects get taken up. It's not the way it works. But you do look to influence the processes by which projects get prioritized. So I think we have an opportunity there. But it's to be done in a way, obviously, in keeping in mind that, you know, the wishes of the open source community. This is a very different process here. There are only 8 members, so for us it gives us that opportunity. And you asked the question, what does it take to become a Platinum member? You should have demonstrated that you are really heavily committed to open source and to this community. So the fact that we got there is a recognition of the contributions we've made over the last 3 to 4 years and how heavily we've participated with the community, how well our engineers have integrated with the rest of the community and worked with the different teams and whether it's in the code reviews or submissions and blueprints and so on. So we've demonstrated that we are a serious organization and we have solid processes to work through this open source mechanism.
So final question for you. We're in Paris. There's lots of things going on downstairs in the community. What is the best booth t-shirt that you've seen? And is it Intel's?
It's certainly ours caught a lot of attention. I was wearing it myself and walking around, and I had people stop by and say, where can I get one of these t-shirts? So I'm biased. I'm heavily mm-hmm. biased. I was wearing one of ours and getting stopped by people. So mm-hmm. I don't think I spent enough time trying to notice what other t-shirts were around there. I was quite heavily focused on trying to see what people are showing in those booths. But I'm sure in the next couple of days I'll find some t-shirt over there that catches my attention more than ours.
I did like Rackspaces. I think it was it was code for I love Paris. Written in code. So that was nice. That was a good one. There are some others. It seems like there is a informal competition here between the exhibitors of who can have the best t-shirt.
Coolest t-shirt.
So we're going to have to raise the bar next year, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, Krish, it's been a pleasure having you on the program today. I know that you're a busy guy at the OpenStack Summit. We hope to have you back again soon.
Thank you, Allison. Thanks for the opportunity here to be here. Really enjoyed it.
Visit ChipChat online at intel.com/chipchat. And for more information on data center technologies, visit intel.com/bigdata, intel.com/cloud, and intel.com/datacenteroptimization.